Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hi, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
Welcome to
Hello.
Wonder. Hello, welcome.
Hi.
Hi, come in. Take off your shoes.
Please take off your
shoes. Take off your shoes. We want to see those feet. This is wonderful. Shall we talk about things that are good, that we like, that we are into? We are back from New York City. We didn't miss an episode, I guess, so you don't know that we were there. But we were in New York City.
We did talk a lot about going.
Can you feel the sophisticated and just cool New York City vibes coming off of us? Trains, art, culture.
Bagels, pizza.
We've got it all from New York City. And now you can have it too. We'll give you the abundance of art and culture and bagels and pizza. That we did eat some good pizza while we were there. It was fun. Our kids are, Henry is a picky eater. He likes one specific type of pizza, but it was fun because there was one night where we ordered pizza for all of us. And I was like, man, if we can't get him to eat this, we're going to have to figure out other food. We're staying at a hotel. That's not easy. But it was really great to just be like, Henry, this is New York City pizza. You got to try this. And he ate it. He was like, I love New York City pizza.
Yeah.
Those little tricks and hacks as a parent are
He's a little culture vulture now.
He really, really is. Hey, do you have a small wonder?
I'm going to say my small wonder is when a hotel has a fridge and a microwave in the room.
Huge for us.
We stayed very shortly in Philadelphia in a room that had both. And then went to New York and then ended up in a room that had neither, which is the problem when you have small children. So we luckily were able to switch with Justin and get a room with a fridge, but no microwave.
Yeah.
So we just kept ending up with all these leftovers and we would dutifully pile them in the fridge and then realize, like, I guess that's it for them.
Left behind a lot of dim sum. In the Big Apple, heartbreaking. I did enjoy eating it, even though I exploded a soup dumpling all over my shirt moments before going to the theater to perform The Adventure Zone. I'm going to say big shout out to the Nintendo World Store and FAO Schwartz in New York City, side by side. If you're going with a kid who likes shopping for toys to New York City, you cannot do better than those two businesses. We did go on a rainy Saturday afternoon, which I imagine is the worst imaginable conditions to go to a big sort of headline store in New York City like that, because it was just like sardines jam-packed in those two buildings. But Henry's eyes were aglow with the promise of retail.
And, yeah, exactly.
That was very fun as a parent. I go first this week. Appropriately enough, this week, I'm going to talk about conventions because we were in New York for New York Comic Con, which was my first time going to New York Comic Con. The rest of my family, I feel like, has been several times, but this is my first time. And it just reminded me of how much I enjoy the whole idea of conventions, whether it's for comics or games or whatever. They are all so, so very unique and exciting. It is very fun for me that you have sort of gotten embroiled in this world as well. I think Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle was the first one you had been to.
It was, yeah.
Was that last year or the year before? So you're fairly fresh on the ground of this world.
Yeah, no, I you went as a child, right?
Like
your dad would take you as a kid.
Yes.
This was not anything I had any experience with until I was an adult.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine what it would feel like as a child.
Well, I'll talk about that because I did start going to conventions since I was like in middle school, starting with Mid-Ohio Con, which does not exist anymore, I found out. They changed the name of it, and it ran until 2019. They haven't done one in 4 years, which is heartbreaking, because this was very formative for me. But every November around Thanksgiving, it would happen. Dad would pile the three of us in the minivan, and we would drive, 3 hours to Columbus.
Oh, so your mom didn't even have to go?
No, it was a sweet setup for mom. I imagine she got some very rare chill out time with the four of us gone.
Was this because your dad was collecting comic books primarily, or was it like also the glitz and glamour of the celebs?
No, I honestly think more than anything, it was just a unique experience. I feel like dad didn't go there so much for comics as much as he did for like bootleg VHS collections of, you know, Star Trek Andromeda or whatever. But we would drive up in the mornings, just he would let us run around there all day, and then we would drive back from Columbus at night. And it was always very whirlwind, but it was super fun. It was a weird experience for me because, like, a lot of Mid-Ohio Con wasn't stuff that I was particularly enthusiastic about. Like, there was a lot of signings and photos with, like, the cast of Leave It to Beaver, or, like, photo shoots with Lou Ferrigno, who one time we saw at a Johnny Rockets just annihilating a giant hamburger, which was terrifying to behold.
Where was that?
It was, like, across the street from the convention center.
Okay.
And even though I wasn't, like, really big into comics or old-ass TV shows, it was always a really, like, exciting place to be because I was surrounded by, like, nerds who were bigger nerds than I was, which was a rare experience. All sort of just dealing in, you know, katanas and imported Japanese figurines and vintage Playboys.
And how did that feel like to be around nerds that were bigger nerds than you? Was it, like, comforting or intimidating?
But a little bit of both. Okay. Like, I felt like I was not well versed enough in the things that were being exalted there, to, like, really participate in it. But as a sort of tourist in that world, it was illuminating. And very, very cool. I will say the last couple that we went to was when the Pokemon trading card game came out, and they held tournaments, which I competed in and did quite well, if I do say so myself. I think the last year we went, I came in second overall, which was really, really, you know, a real feather in my cap. But I always really looked forward to it, because what you have to remember is that this was largely pre-internet, right? Like, we had, you know, AOL or whatever in our house, but it wasn't like the internet as it is now, where there is a Discord community for every imaginable, like, interest, and if you are into something, you can just find, you know, infinity people who are also into that thing. Like, there was so much excitement when you went to Mid-Ohio Con, because it was a rare opportunity to, you know, gather with people who are into the same, like, very specific stuff that you are into. And even if I wasn't into Leave It to Beaver, like, seeing a bunch of people who are get together was, like, a really, a very exciting and very memorable experience.
Though, like, and this shows my, like, lack of experience, but I did not expect the number of people wearing costumes. It really caught me off guard when I just looked around and saw so much of it. I didn't really, like, typically, for example, when you go to the mall to buy, you know, a book, you don't dress as the book.
No, so, yeah. I would say the mall and a convention are two quite distinct sort of
I just places. Like, I view it as primarily an experience for spending money. And so, and I'm not trying to hop on some kind of anti-capitalist horse. I'm just saying, like, I didn't expect people to dress up for that.
Yeah.
And then taking it in was truly, like, overwhelming for me.
Cosplay is a thing. Like, cosplay more or less was not a thing that was a big thing at Mid-Ohio Con. Like, people would come wearing, you know, there were a lot of Star Trek uniforms going around, but this was not, like, a big facet of Ohio Con. I'm not well versed enough in cosplay or the history of it to really speak on that, but I feel like I have watched it become a really common thing at cons in the, you know, length of time that I have been going to them. And I feel pretty authoritative in that, because I hang on to every lanyard for every con I've ever been to. I think I've been to probably close to 100 or so at this point.
Oh, for sure.
Because after Mid-Ohio Con, I started working at Joystick in, like, 2008, and then I was going to several a year. But it was a completely different experience, because all of a sudden, like, I was working a lot. One of our earlier episodes of Wonderful, I talked about E3 and sort of eulogized it, because it doesn't exist anymore. But it was just like me in a room with a, like a really tight knit small team of reporters just working into the wee hours of the morning.
Yeah, because you would spend all day getting information, and then you'd spend all night
writing,
making articles. Yeah,
and so like that was incredible in a different way, where like the enthusiasm for this specific thing was there more so than Mid-OhioCon ever kind of like gave to me. Yeah. All of a sudden, like, I was a part of it, and I also got to kind of like peek behind the curtain of this industry that I am, that I continue to be like absolutely embroiled in. And so I've been to every like game convention that has existed. I've gotten to travel overseas to get to go to like Gamescom and Tokyo Game Show, which are very, very cool opportunities. So that like is like another angle through which I love the convention scene. And now like that I don't really work in the games press anymore, I'm on this other side of it where, and I'm so grateful to be here, where like people are coming to our signings and our photo shoots and our panels and our shows. All of a sudden I'm Lou Ferrigno eating a big burger, Johnny Rockets. It's so cool. It's incredibly humbling, especially now that like I'm not so much on social media, like getting to talk to people who enjoy our stuff is important and amazing and very, very humbling. But I also, even though I'm like in this place now with my relationship to conventions, I still love walking a show floor as much as I did when I was going to Mid-OhioCon and I was in middle school and just seeing like all the imported Japanese figurines and Pokemon memorabilia.
The variety of Lego minifigures.
There's so many Lego minifigures, which is amazing. I love walking through an artist alley, which is like a very constant thing. And like I have a bunch of art here in my office that I pick up at these artist alleys because it's so exciting. That's like another facet of cons that like I'm not an artist, so like I'm not really a part of. But
not in the visual sense.
Yeah. Thank you, baby. I appreciate it. I was not fishing for compliments there. It is bonkers how much like the idea of conventions has exploded in my lifetime. Because like Mid-OhioCon was basically the only thing we had access to in the entire tri-state area. And now there are around 2 million conventions held in the U.S. alone annually across like, of course, a bunch of different disciplines, right?
Yeah.
There's like dental conventions or whatever. I'm sure those are lit as hell. Huntington like used to not have anything in this way. Huntington used to have the what was called the Tri-State Sportsman's Expo that we would go to because Dad would do like remote broadcasts from them. And
was it like fishing stuff?
Hunting and fishing, which like I don't give a shit about, but we would tour. They would have like RVs that you can come in and tour.
Oh, that's fun.
Which is always great. And we'd ask our dad, like, we should really get an RV.
I know. Isn't it funny when you're a kid and you just assume like everything is within reach? Like I was talking to Henry the other day and telling him that I didn't go to Disney World until I was in fifth grade. And he was like, why did you wait so long?
Yeah. A big thing there was jerky. That was like the only thing I cared about is I would buy a lot of jerky. And that's probably where my love for jerky came around. But like there was nothing that I cared about.
Yeah, at that place. Of course.
Now Huntington has like several comic and anime expos that happen every year, which is, I don't know. I feel like if that had been available to me when I was younger, it would have been a very transformative experience.
Yeah.
I love talking backstage at cons now to like other people in our field who went to cons growing up and hearing like their experience going to like, you know, actual nerd expos in their hometowns and how much it sort of, you know, shaped their relationship with this community. And, you know, I'm very grateful that I had Mid-OhioCon for that, even though it wasn't specifically kind of tailored to my interests. I love them. I love working at them. I love going to them. And I'm very grateful that I've had the kind of life and career that I have had where I've been able to go to so many and see it from from, as Joni Mitchell would say, both sides now. I always get excited to go to them regardless of like whichever one it is, if it's about board games or video games or comics or whatever.
And now that you have two children, you have an excuse. Totally,
right. Yeah. It's
to go to the show floor and just browse because it's for the kids.
That is one way of putting it. The other way is like, I remember when we took Henry to Emerald City, that was his first con too.
Yeah.
And he saw like cosplayers and was like, it was like an eye-opening experience for him to see like.
And me too.
Yeah, right? Like, he could be a fan of a thing to an extent that, like, he didn't really know about. And that's, like, that is cool to show that to someone who is very enthusiastic about a lot of different sort of, like, nerd things. So, conventions, they're great. They sometimes they sell infinite root beer mugs there. And sometimes they smell like popcorn. They fill the entirety of a, you know, million square foot building with popcorn smell, which is astonishing. So, cons, get there. Can I steal your way?
Yeah.
We all got needs. And to satisfy those needs, we subscribe to different services to fulfill those needs. Some of them are pretty dang good at it, if I do say so myself. But then you put away your childish things. You say, I don't have a need for a string cheese subscription service.
This huge box of string cheese every month and immediately throwing it away.
Yeah.
Maybe I should not receive this huge box of string cheese every month.
But you forget, don't you? So easily.
I know.
Your many subscriptions you've scattered, like Johnny Appleseed to his apple seeds. Well, Rocket Money is here to help. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I've used Rocket Money before, and it found, not a joke, maybe 6 things that I had completely forgotten about. Like, maybe about $50 a month worth of shit that I just completely did not know, nor did I interface with the things that I was subscribing to.
Yeah, it's like that. We got that one app that promised to show us hockey and then almost entirely stopped showing us hockey.
Yep. And Rocket Money was like, you're not watching the hockey anymore. The Blues lost and not in the playoffs. Anyway. Rocket Money is fantastic, and we recommend using it if you think you might have some of those phantom subs. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wonderful. That's rocketmoney.com/wonderful. One last time, rocketmoney.com/wonderful. Folks, I'm recording this ad by myself because Rachel, she did something totally wild. She hopped on her electric e-bike, and she was like, I am out of here. And then she zoomed off. She hit a ramp and flew up in the sky like an E.T. movie and just went so fast that I was like, dang, where'd my wife even go? And she yelled from over the horizon on a bike adventure. And so I have to celebrate that. I have to cheer for her on that. This bike that Rachel got from Electric E-Bike, it is one, very sleek and stylish. It looks fast because it is. The battery lasts forever. It shows up at your door, ships for free. It's got a quick toolless assembly, and you can even fold it up for easy travel and storage. It is the perfect time of year to have a sweet little bike for yourself to go on your own bike adventures away from your husband. Anyway, go full throttle into spring with Electric E-Bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at electricebikes.com, and please mention that Wonderful sent you in the post-checkout survey. That's electricebikes.com.
Hi, I'm Bikram Chatterjee, the CEO of Maximum Fun, and I'm here with my fellow worker owner,
Marissa Flaxbart, producer. This week for Co-Optober, we'll be highlighting other co-ops who work in the arts.
The past few years have been challenging for all kinds of creative industries. We at MaxFun believe that co-ops are better suited to meet these challenges, and there are a lot of other companies who feel the same way.
So all this week on our social media and website, we'll be sharing interviews with some of our fellow co-ops.
And head to our YouTube channel Friday, October 20th, where I'll be talking with worker owners from Defector and Stoxy about their co-ops and why the model works for them.
And next week is Volunteer Week. Learn how you can participate in that and get details on exclusive merch, our live streams, and other Co-Optober happenings at MaximumFun.org/Co-Optober.
That's COOPTOBER.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Okay, this topic, my wonderful thing this week, is a topic that I think you will have a lot of input to provide.
Okay.
But I also think we have discussed this topic before, but I am focusing on a particular element of it.
Okay, cool.
And I am talking about the names of Pokemon.
Oh, babe.
I know, it's your love language.
Yeah, it's close enough. Wow.
It was wild. You know, I felt a little bit like I was wandering into your corner of the world.
Sure.
And I thought this might be a more appropriate topic for Griffin because he has the background. But then I realized you couldn't really come to this with like, I really love the names of Pokemon, because your understanding is so much deeper than mine.
That's true.
Whereas I can just kind of delight in the like sonic pleasure of some of these guys.
You could also just delight in Sonic Pleasure, which is a different game franchise, but
different corner.
Is it so? Henry's gotten into Pokemon cards, so I imagine this is where this is coming from. That you have seen so many more Pokemon and their names than you ever have in your entire life.
Yes. Okay. The gateway for me. Is, of course, Sprigatito.
Sprigatito, fun to say, fun to play. That was my starter. Got to.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I love a grass-type starter. Hey, you're in the corner. You're in my corner right now.
I know.
You are a guest here.
I know. Henry, obviously, is becoming more and more interested in Pokemon, particularly the cards. And one thing that has been happening lately at a nearby fast food establishment is that you can receive cards.
Right.
And he has repeatedly received his Sprigatito.
Yeah.
And I always get really excited when I hear him say it or I get the chance to say it myself.
You've gotten to say it twice or three times so far already in this recording. This is a great day for you.
Some of my other favorites, Garchomp.
Garchomp.
Fun to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
I found one named Swampert.
Swampert, sure.
Which is fun. It kind of sounds like Stuart, but a Pokemon.
Swampert evolves into Marsh Stomp, which is not fun to say. I don't like the way that kind of runs together.
I did a lot of research trying to figure out, like, is there a guy?
Like a person?
No, that, like, names these. Like, a guy that, like, lives in a room in, like, a big tower and just names Pokemon all day. That does not seem to be true. Although there do seem to be teams devoted to, like, translations.
That's what it is, right? It's
you would need that.
All of these names are localized because they have Japanese names that are, I don't think, ever the same names as their anglicized titles.
Yeah. So I did find some... and I don't know how reputable these sources are. Does CBR mean anything to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's an outlet that I've heard of before.
They identified some of the, like, roots of these names. Mm-hmm. Do you know Pikachu?
Do I know Pikachu?
Like, the root of that?
That's a pretty direct translation, right? Like, that is more or less what his Japanese name is, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so Pika Pika means sparkling or shining, and Choo Choo is the noise a mouse makes.
Yes, mm-hmm. Okay. I did know that.
Lechonk, another one I like.
So fucking good, Lechonk.
LeChonk draws upon a mix of Spanish and English with words like lechon and oink.
Yes.
As well as the affectionate slang word chonk, generally meaning big, round, and cute.
So him and Sprigatito are both from the new games, Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, which are set in a region that each game's region is sort of inspired by a real world region. And that is supposed to be like Spain. And so that is where you get a lot of the, a lot of that flavor, like Fue Coco. I love Fue Coco.
I found, this is thegamer.com, which they allowed me onto, even though I am not one. I didn't have to answer a series of questions to access the site.
A CAPTCHA for non-nerds.
And they list some of the like more punny ones. There's coughing and wheezing.
Great.
Are you familiar with those?
Of course. That's the, if you get into... I would say the first 250 Pokemon, I know them quite well.
Do you know about Sudowoodo?
Sudowoodo, yeah. He's mm-hmm. He looks like a tree, but he's a rock type Pokemon, hence the name.
Octillery?
Yes, this is an octopus, but it's also like artillery. Pretty much, I would say 96% of Pokemon names is just like animal plus verb or other noun.
I'm just reading a lot of these now. Berserker.
Berserker. Love mm-hmm. it. New Meowth evolution.
Yeah, exactly. I knew you were going to be good at this.
Yeah.
I didn't know that I wouldn't have to finish a
There's
sentence.
There's like 900 of these guys, and I think I know almost all of them at this point.
Crabominable.
Crabominable is a weird one because I think he looks like he's water type, but he's actually fighting type. I get him confused with, oh, no, that's a different one. That's an icy fella.
Yeah, kind of a like an abominable snowman.
In my defense, there's like 90 crab-based the well is running dry of animals that they have not explored. I think I'm thinking of Crab Brawler, which is
of course. And just to end on a seasonal note, there's Pumpkaboo.
There's a few pumpkin based guys as well.
Oh, there are? I guess pumpkins have global appeal.
Yeah, sure. Everyone loves a pumpkin. One of my all-time favorite names is a big Pokemon with just a huge tongue that's as long as its body. It's called Lickitung. That's all of his name is. Very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't have a lot of expertise. But Sprigatito.
Sprigatito is a good one.
It's very good. Do you know Pokemon mean the pocket monsters?
I did know that, yes. Yeah. I did know about that.
I enjoyed that, too. I guess it started as like a magazine or something, and then they sold it as a game.
No, I don't think that's right.
The article I read said the franchise has its roots in a gaming magazine in the early 1980s. Game Freak
is the name of the company that makes Pokemon. So it's possible that they started as that may be some fact about Game Freak, the company that I was not aware of.
Yeah.
But, Game Freak is the developer of all the mainline Pokemon games.
Okay.
I'm so glad you came on this journey. I think I did a Pokemon segment, but I guess I didn't really talk about their names as much.
Just like as an outsider, it's a very delightful aspect of the Pokemon.
I think you'd be good at it. I think you would be good at naming Pokemon. There's a great series of videos that is probably quite ancient at this point where someone shows pictures of Pokemon to their grandmother, and their grandmother says what they think that their name is.
Oh, that's great.
And it is delightful. And some of the names are, I would say, even better than the names that some of these guys ended up with, but... I think that'd be a fun job. This looks like a dinosaur with a bulb of garlic on its back. Well, that is a Bulbasaur, of course.
Exactly. So you think they start with the drawing and then they name it?
I think that's all they, yeah. I think they say, that's a turtle. What's he do? Squirts. Well?
I was looking desperately for like a little feature, little like, heartwarming piece about like the process of naming Pokemons. I couldn't find it.
It might exist. There is a the art of localization and translation is a strange one, because there is, I would say, and this is all from, you know, outsider's perspective looking in and covering the games industry, there is a lot about localization that is not prominently discussed or revealed. And I think that is because of this sort of cultural idea of, like, not wanting to step on the original work that the, yeah, that the folks did. There is a there's this a company, I think, called 884 that does a lot of localizations of Japanese games to English, and there's so much that goes into it, because you get into, like, you know, translating these, like, historical cultural meanings that don't have necessarily, like, an English like direct correlation. So, like, the entire thing is very, very fascinating, but it is also, like, a thing kind of shrouded in mystery, because it's just not something that is discussed a whole lot. Also because, like, back in the day, translation teams was, like, a guy. Like, one dude sometimes, yeah, who was, like, doing most of the heavy lifting. And so, you know, that it is lost to history for that reason. But,
yeah.
I'm sure, I bet there's a great story out there just waiting to be told,
mm-hmm,
about Sprigatito. Sprigatito. And all of his friends. Sprigatito.
Sprigatito.
Can I tell you what our friends at home are talking about?
Yeah.
Well, Hemlock says, my small wonder is lucky socks. My Nana got me a pair of knitted multicolor socks with lots of different patterns, and I always wear them to sleep the night before big events. Telling myself the socks are lucky and magical gives me just a little more confidence. I think this is very nice, the idea of wearing socks to bed. I know.
Once you, like, remove those guys, it's really hard to get in the habit of putting them on.
That's where I let my body know it's time for rest.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not wearing socks right now. That might be why I feel so very tired right now. Nathaniel says, my small wonder this week was inspired by a thought Rachel had in the outro of the August 30th episode. Yes, of course. Pepper Palace. It's a US/Canada hot sauce and spice rub store that's basically what you would get if you crossed a candy store and the spice aisle at the grocery store. The entire store is arranged from mild to very hot, and the employees are always very enthusiastic about hot sauce.
Huh. I don't know what this is referencing.
I think you mentioned a hot sauce sommelier.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And so that is what this... that's what the Pepper Palace offers, I suppose.
The Pepper Palace.
Pepper Palace. It's fun. It's fun to say.
Sprigatito went to the Pepper Palace.
Sprigatito went to the Pepper Palace. How's my sibilance, Reggie? Reggie's our producer. yeah, man. I really like hot sauce, and I feel like maybe I'm stuck in a rut a little bit.
We definitely are. Like, we just buy the same stuff over and over again.
It's a hard thing to try other versions of, because if you have the wrong one, it will wreck my whole shop. It's a high risk, low reward sort of experimentation.
Yeah, we need to go to the Pepper Palace.
Gotta go to the Pepper Palace. Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for these for a theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. Thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. Go to MaximumFun.org. Check out all the great shows that they have there, because they're all great and they're all shows. we have some new merch, including a poster of the Plato's Rave, a diagram, a map, if you will, a walkthrough of Plato's Rave.
For those of you, I have to imagine there's at least 2% of our listeners that do not also listen to your other podcasts. This is a bit from my brother and me, where the boys turned a container store into a rave and added a variety of floors and elements to this.
It spiraled, I believe, out of the first question we addressed in the episode, and then we accidentally talked about it for like 55 mm-hmm. minutes.
The great thing about this poster is it's like a little Where's Waldo, and uh-huh. that me and Cindy and Teresa are in it. Amanda's in it.
Yeah, it's great.
You can find a lot of insider, like, references there.
Yeah, we also have other merch and stuff. We got an Amnesty Lodge candle. I don't know if we still have Poetry Corner candles on there, but I lit one before we recorded in here, because I left an old sandwich in the room before we left town, and it had left a foul musk. But the Poetry Corner candle is so powerful that it erased it and replaced it with a just incredible aroma.
I should say that it is frequent that Griffin and I will eat lunch in our office space. It's not like he...
Like 5 days a week.
Like, not like he... Somehow a sandwich ended up in here.
No, I mean, sandwiches end up here 5 days a week when I eat them for lunch. That's at macquarie.merch.com. I don't think I said the link. And, this is usually when I'd plug shows, but we're done for the year, so that's cool.
Well, eventually there will be candle nights.
Eventually there will be candle nights. And so that'll be exciting. I'm sure we'll have details on that soon. But that's it. That's it. That's going to be it for us.
Thanks to everybody that came to New York and Philadelphia.
It was so cool. So cool to see all of y'all. And, Sprigatito.
Sprigatito.
Sprigatito. Do you know what Sprigatito evolves into? Meowscarada. Isn't that... It's all so good.
It's very good.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.